fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Do you know what often liberal-leaning comedian Jon Stewart has done now? This entertainer that we have sometimes referred to as an S-O-you-know-what has proven to be a true champion of veterans and their rights. He has established himself as a spokesperson against the shabby treatment of our vets and even told CNN, he is all in favor of a military draft where you integrate races and social status to the armed forces. Also, you may say he's unhappy with what the left is now going through or what they're going to have to contend with, like the American adversary Sunday night smackdown on AM 660 The Answer, where you can jump into the ring with our superstar political professional wrestling champion host, Christopher Hart.
All right. Thanks very much, Lair Adams. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us on this Sunday night. And speaking of WWE superstars, we're going to have one on the show tonight. That's right. Chris Masters, champion of the Master Lock. Yeah, we're going to see if we can pick the Master Lock tonight. That's right, folks. Chris
Along
Masters
with Sonny?
Is going to be on the show. Yeah. And then he'll join us for a little while with Sonny. That's right. And we hope that you'll be with us the full 3 hours tonight, folks, as we have our Sunday evening classic 3-hour tour of American Adversaries Radio. And we are live on the Mercury, coming from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studio on AM 660 The Answer. And don't forget, for the best in Mercury Free dentistry, call my award-winning dentist, Dr. James E. Hardy, at 407-678-3399. I was just in there last week, and they treated me like royalty, like they treat everybody, though, folks. All right, and we like to think we treat you like royalty around here, too, because we don't give you the BS. We give you the straight scoop, if you will. That was Lair Adams. I am Christopher Hart. And in the studio with us tonight is our man, Johnny Guns.
Yes, sir.
There's Johnny. Johnny on the spot, if you will. And Nostra Dennis is not here again with us tonight. He'll be back on the show Tuesday. And Carl Jackson is out sick. The whole household is sick at the Jackson
what
house.
What are they sick with?
We hope that they'll get over their flu-like symptoms and it doesn't progress into Ebola, which I'm sure it will not. But and Jeff Sinis is on the bridge tonight, so we are in good hands. There he is. And you can be on the show with us, too. 407-774-8255 is the number, and you're going to want to keep that phone close by because we do have a pair of tickets. I thought we'd have more tonight, but we're going to have more during the week. But we're going to have a pair of tickets to the Taste of Apopka Food and Business Expo, where we will be broadcasting the show live remotely on this coming Thursday, along with Colonel Danny McKnight and Mike McBath. So it would be a great opportunity for you to come out and see us do it
Mike
live.
Mike McBath is showing up, too?
Oh, yeah. He wouldn't miss that.
Well, there won't be any food left after him.
Right. Well, I tell you what, if he brings any of them big old NFL players with him, it may not be. But you folks are welcome to come. We do have a pair of tickets we're going to give away at some point tonight. Not right yet. We'll let you know when. And, of course, we're going to be playing our Who Said That contest tonight, too. And the Taste of Apopka is a great way to get to sample a lot of great food, and there'll be more than you can eat there, that's for sure.
Local restaurants, too.
Yeah, there'll be lots of them. They just fill up the campus area, the open area there at the CenturyLink campus right there on 436. just west of Apopka, excuse me, just east of Apopka, just east of Apopka, and just west of Cafe Positano. And you can go to apopkachamber.org or give them a call at 407-886-1441 to find out more about tickets. And they're $20 in advance, $25 at the door, but free if you can get your hands on the pair we're going to give away later on
in
the show.
And that's this Thursday?
This coming Thursday.
Doggone. I hope I can eat solid food by then.
All right. Well, they'll have lots of banana pudding at the Porky's Barbecue Station, so you'll definitely want to get on out and take advantage of that. We do have a big show lineup for you tonight, in spite of the fact that Carl and Nostra Dennis won't be here. But we will be having Chris Masters, as I said, and he's a recent superstar for the WWE and other federations, and he'll be joining us live at the bottom of the next hour. And Sonny, of course, will be joining us live at 7 o'clock. And we're going to be talking about a lot of things in the meantime. You know, there's 1,500 more troops now going to Iraq. I guess they won't be, they'll be wearing tennis shoes, too, I guess, because, of course.
Can't be boots on the ground, Chris.
Yeah, we're not going to be having any of the boots on the ground stuff. So 1,500 more troops going to Iraq. And we'll be talking about that and about how we need to rethink the way we do war. You know, I've been basically talking about this in my own way for months, if not years now.
And Chris, how does that make those soldiers feel?
Well,
you're not a soldier. You're going there, but you're not really.
We'll be getting to that in a few minutes.
Yeah.
Because Mark Stein is he's got a new book out called The Undocumented Mark Stein, and he makes an excellent point in that book that I will be addressing tonight. We'll also be talking about the world's poverty rate. Have you heard about it?
No.
Well, we're going to be talking about it tonight. There's probably a reason why you haven't heard about it, and you might imagine what that reason is. Okay, and of course, we got Nostra Dennis's past. Johnny Gunn's going to bring us. He's got some WTF news lined up for us. So we got a big show lined up for you, and who knows? We might even give away some Roxy Pacifics, the great all-natural kelp solution, good for anything that ails your skin, safe for anywhere you can spray it, literally. But first, I just want to say a few words. You know, Tuesday is Veterans Day. We will be talking about some military issues in this hour, but I want to directly, you know, just recognize our veterans, those who have served and those who are serving, like the 1,500 who are going over to Iraq, and they don't think about it, they just do it. When it comes to our soldiers, that's what makes them great. They don't consider the political ramifications. It doesn't matter to them. What matters to them is the orders that they are given to do. Now, as I said, we'll be talking about that particular 1,500 more in just a minute. But that's what makes our military great. All volunteer Army, men and women, and they all do the best they can. And it is far and above the call of duty in most cases. And we certainly owe them every debt of gratitude that we can offer up. And so Tuesday, please, among everything that you else that you might do to honor our veterans, I would ask you to say a special prayer for all of them. Take a few moments in the quiet of the morning or the evening or whenever you can get a quiet few moments, and please say a prayer for our veterans, especially those who are on their way into harm's way now and in the near future, because there will be more. There always will be more. There will never be an end to the need for our veterans. Also, this week, actually today, as a matter of fact, we are celebrating the 25th year anniversary of the beginning of the wall coming down. I'm talking about the Berlin Wall. And, of course, it came down at least in no small part due to the demand that Ronald Reagan made on Mikhail Gorbachev. And, of course, the changing tide of things, a lot of it had to do with Lech Walesa, what he did in Poland with the Solidarity Movement and how that spread throughout Europe. A lot of it had to do with Pope John Paul and his influence across Europe. And, of course, a lot of it had to do with Ronald Reagan and his let's just say, vision of a world without the Soviet Union. So 25 years ago, on November 9th, people just went out and started hacking the thing down. And the most fascinating thing is that they weren't shot in the process. But there was an interesting article that appears this week in the Wall Street Journal on the op-ed page entitled, "Putin Tries to Undo the Tragedy of the Berlin Wall's Fall." Let me just read a little bit about this. I think it'll give you a good insight into the man that Vladimir Putin is. On November 9th, 1989, the whole world was riveted by the spectacle of people dancing, singing, and toasting one another atop the Berlin Wall, and by the impassioned efforts of delirious Berliners to demolish it with chisels, hammers, pickaxes, and any other tools they had. Everyone was celebrating the collapse of communism and the dawn of a new era of freedom. Well, not everyone. In the East German city of Dresden, a 37-year-old KGB officer and his comrades began burning files, fearing that the irate protesters who targeted the Stasi secret police headquarters in East Berlin would also come after them. "I personally burned a huge amount of material," the KGB officer recalled later. "We burned so much stuff that the furnace burst." When he called the Soviet military base nearby asking for guidance, he was told, "We cannot do anything without orders from Moscow, and Moscow is silent." Looking back at the fall of the Berlin Wall, the KGB officer conceded that those events and what he termed the Soviet Union's regrettable loss of power in the region was inevitable, since a position built on walls and divides cannot last. Then he added, "But I wanted something different to rise in its place." Of course, this KGB officer was Vladimir Putin. And we see, you know, that he, from the very start, and of course we've talked about this, his attitude is to restore the Soviet Union, but in a fashion that doesn't have a physical wall, so to speak, but nonetheless has walls just the same. Walls of their form of suppression and political correctness. And he's been working at it ever since. He's trying once again to bring back the old Soviet Union. And unfortunately, he seems to be getting a lot of help from the West, who stands idly by as he carries out his reestablishment program, shall we call it. And sooner or later, Europe may look up and see that it's too late and then decide to, well, we'll just go along to get along. The good old Soviet Union is back. They're powerful. The United States is on the wane. We got to put our money on the front runner. So there's a lot of cause for pause as we go forward. I know we have a lot of reason to celebrate after the other night, but there's a lot of cause for pause because this president still just doesn't get it. And if you don't think I know what I'm talking about, just keep listening, because we'll be talking a lot more about it when we come back. You are listening to the American Adversaries. Don't forget, we will be giving away some tickets to the Taste of Apopka Food and Business Expo here shortly. And we're going to be playing our Who Said That contest tonight with a short, succinct, and yet I think very wise statement from a very wise person. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is Patricia Summerlin. When I'm in Central Florida, I like to snuggle with three sexy humps. Christopher Hart, Nestor Dennis, and Lair Adams. Ooh, the American Adversaries. These guys stimulate my brain.
All right, we're trying to stimulate yours. And, of course, Sonny will be with us later on in the show. Welcome back to the show, folks. That's right, you are listening to the American Adversaries. 407-774-8255 is the number. And keep that phone close, because you never know when we're going to put out the word for those free tickets to the Taste of Apopka. And I was just telling Johnny, they invite you to eat all you can, and if there's any left over at the end of the night, they practically beg you to take it home with you. So,
what are they going to do with it?
Come out hungry and plan on. Don't be surprised if you go home with some stuff. I remember the donut lady last year. She gave away. She didn't have any donuts left at the end of the night, but she gave those away. So, okay. as Lair said, you know, we have 1,500 of our bravest going over there, and believe me, they don't question their orders, but they are not, to answer your question, Lair, inspired by this this commander in chief, if you will. But nonetheless, they're going to go over there to do their job. They are being called trainers and advisors once again. But of course, we know that they're over there being put in hot spots, and there's no question that they will, if they haven't already been, engaging the enemy. The president today on Fake the Nation with Bobby Schieffer, in an exclusive interview, admitted that you know, the situation over there is bad, getting worse. He didn't say it in so many words, but then Schieffer was asking him about Iran. We'll talk about that a little bit, but I don't want to get diverted too much into that. But he said something interesting, and this was a word that I have used on the show before, and I said, get used to it. This is going to be a new word coming out of this new war, this new type of war over there, where you're in a war theater, a war zone, where there's all this violence going on, but you're only going to concentrate on little bits of violence over here and over there and over there, and you're not going to worry about violence over there or that bad guy over there. I mean, it's very discriminatory type war, if you will. But he mentioned once again the word deconflicting. And deconflicting is what we have to do with Iran, because as the president admitted himself today in his own way, it is because Iran has soldiers in and around Baghdad. Now, we've always known, you know, they've been a problem. As a matter of fact, I was with Dick Cheney back when we were at the worst of the Iraq war and we had the surge. I was with Dick Cheney. You need to go over there and you need to put troops on the border with Iran. And the first Iranian that steps foot in Iraq after that, you kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And if they keep coming, well, maybe you just go on over the border into Iran and take care of business there. That's the kind of war
that sends a message.
Well, and it's the kind of war that you actually get a resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And which brings me to the point which Mark Stein makes. His book is a compilation of articles that he's written. It's called The Undocumented Mark Stein, Don't Say You Weren't Warned. And in a, let's see what the date on this is. In one of his, this was an article, an editorial that appeared in the National Review, June 6, 2011, which I must admit I did not read, did not see. It's called Too Big to Win. And basically he makes the point that ever since World War II, we've not fought wars decisively. As a matter of fact, he says, he coins this phrase, what does it say? Let's see. We have entered into, since World War II, starting with Korea, an era of massively applied desultoriness. That's spelled DESULTORINESS, desultoriness. It means lack of steadiness, lack of a plan, lack of cohesiveness. So we have this massively applied lack of cohesive strategy or plan. And in fact, we do. I mean, even just look back when George W. Bush was president. We didn't really have a decisive war plan to end the violence in that country. If we did, we would have put in about another 200,000 troops, and we would have secured those cities, and we would have maintained the security of those cities, probably even to this day. That would have been decisive. That would have been a clear message, if you will, like Lair says. And something dawned on me when we had William Federer on the show a couple of weeks ago. And by the way, he's going to be back on the show again Tuesday on a phone interview. But he said, and then he quoted the dates, and a couple of them were on 9/11, like 10,000. On those dates were decisive victories against Islamic extremism as it was being spread around the world. And he said, after those things, you had a couple of 100 years of peace.
Yeah.
All right?
They got put in their place.
Right. That's what we need to do now.
Yeah.
That's what we need to do now. And what Mark Stein is saying in this article is that basically we have become too big to do this. In other words, he's saying because we are the military superpower and economic, but in this case, military superpower of the world, and we have weapons that can annihilate any enemy, we don't use them for that very reason, is that we could win so decisively we would annihilate the enemy. We don't want to do that anymore. And the problem is that that's political correctness thinking. It's this thinking of, well, this is the modern era of war where you minimize civilian casualties. This is the whole purpose of it. We want to win hearts and minds and souls and minimize the civilian casualties. Unfortunately, in that process, you never defeat the enemy's will to fight. The enemy will always outlast that kind of mentality. The only thing that will break the will of the enemy is a good old butt-whipping, like we put on Hitler and the Japanese. It was decisive, all-out victory. And they knew it. There was no denying it. There was no questioning it. And they acquiesced to it. The problem that we have now is even when we have quote-unquote victory, the enemy doesn't see it that way, right? After the Kuwaiti, the first Persian Gulf War, we kick Saddam Hussein out of Iraq. Did he see himself as being a loser? No, he saw himself as a winner. He saw himself as a winner.
He'd sucker the U.S. in.
Look at Al-Qaeda. We whipped him in Iraq. Do they now see themselves as losers? No, they see themselves as winners. The same thing with the Taliban. And the reason is because it hasn't been a decisive victory that took away their will to fight. And you have to do whatever it's going to do in order to accomplish that, or you might just want to rethink even being there at all. You know, Barack Obama might have been just as wise. It might have actually been, given his fortitude, given the political correctness of the world, he actually might have been right to pull everybody out of Iraq, probably should have pulled everybody out of Afghanistan and said, to hell with all y'all, do whatever you want. You know, we're not willing to do what it takes to beat you, so we're just not even going to bother anymore. Unfortunately, that wasn't, you know, what was going through his mind. All he wanted to do was satisfy a political promise,
sure,
and then, you know, hopefully everything was going to be okay. Otherwise, he wouldn't be going back in now. If he really had a design and a plan to get out of there and leave them to their own devices, he would be standing by that right now and saying, look, you know, all I'm going to do is get a bunch of Americans killed over there, hand the war off to my successor, and then where are we all going to be after all that? And he would actually have had a point. All right, when we come back, we'll take this conversation a little bit further, and you're welcome to join as well. 407-774-8255.
Yeah, you got us on a Sunday night tonight. Don't you love it? We're here for 3 hours. We love it, too. We have the best listeners in all of, well, the United States, right here in Central Florida, and you better not go away.
Wrestler, the Killer Bee, B. Brian Blair. And you know, I've held more titles than Moolah's got wrinkles. But my favorite champions are those on the American Adversaries. Lair, Chris, Nostradamus on AM 660, The Answer.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You are in the first hour of our three-hour tour with the American Adversaries. Chris, Lair, Johnny Guns, Jeff is over there behind the glass. No Nostradamus, no Carl Jackson, but hey, that means plenty of time for you to get in and call and join in our conversation. We're talking about Mr. Obama and spending another 1,500 more troops to Iraq. Well, back to Chris Hart.
Yeah, and our policy of massively applied desultoriness. All right, let me just read a little bit from Mark Stein's new book. Once again, this is the...
Are you going to read it with a British accent?
No.
Mark Stein always does.
He's got a great accent. Too Big to Win is the title of this article that he wrote back in June of 2011. At least that's when it was published in the National Review. He said, he's talking about, an article was written in the New York Times by Thomas Friedman about the Afghan and, when we invaded Afghanistan. You'll see what I mean. Instead, America has fallen for the Thomas Friedman thesis, promulgated by the New York Times great thinker in January 2002. He now quotes Thomas Friedman. For all the talk about the vaunted Afghan fighters, this was a war between the Jetsons, that would be us, and the Flintstones. And the Jetsons won, and the Flintstones know it, unquote. And now I go back to Mark Stein. But they didn't. They didn't know they were beaten because they weren't. Because we hadn't destroyed their will as we did to the Germans and Japanese two-thirds of a century ago. And as we surely would not do if we were fighting World War II today. Remember who said that a while back, Lair, when we were at that dinner for him?
Woody. Yes. Yeah, Woody.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Woody Williams. He says, as we did to the Germans and Japanese two-thirds of a century ago, and as we surely would not do if we were fighting World War II today. By contrast, in an era of massively applied desultoriness, we spend a fortune going to war with one hand tied behind our back. The 43% global operating industrial military complex isn't too big to fail, but it is perhaps too big to win, as our enemies understand. So on we stagger with Cold War institutions, transnational sensibilities, politically correct solicitousness, fraudulent preening pseudo nation building, expensive gizmos, little will, and no war aims, but real American lives. These colors don't run, says the T-shirt. But bereft of national purpose, they bleed away to a gray blur on a distant horizon. 66 years after VJ Day, the American way of war needs top-to-toe reinvention. And he's absolutely right. We need to forget about this politically correctness business. And it goes to the heart of what is a just war. Theologians for centuries have debated, is there ever a time when war is justified? And they go down the list. Obviously, if it's territorial conquest, no, that's not a just war. But if you are defending yourself against territorial conquest, it is justified for you to do so. So there are instances when theologians would agree that war is justified.
I mean, even the Pope did that to some extent.
Sure. Right. Now, that doesn't mean that you can carry out war willy-nilly. Now, they call for no atrocities, but two of the things that define a just war is one that has a quick and decisive resolution. In other words, war for war's sake, or just to sort of try to contain things in an equilibrium, if you will, where they exist now, is not a just war. So even though we may think that we're doing the right thing by tying the hands of our combatants and by holding back on the strategy of decisive victory, we are in fact doing the most unjust thing. Well, if we are to engage in war, we must do it decisively and as quickly as possible.
Well, Chris, it's odd that you bring it up because one of the most liberal television shows that was ever on TV was Star Trek. But they dealt with this in one of the original episodes. We're just keeping, you wanted a nice, clean war.
I remember the
you
episode.
You didn't want a war that caused pain and suffering, etc. Yep. People would lose their lives, but if they did it nice and cleanly, it was okay.
Well, I believe that,
it took away every reason to have war and to not have war.
Yeah, it was fought inside a computer.
Yeah, and the casualties would just report to these
would just walk
chambers.
But there'd be no pain.
The execution chambers, basically.
No culture would be destroyed.
And so what Kirk did in order to basically put an end to the nonsense was to destroy the computers and say, okay, now if you want to have war, you will suffer the consequences of
it. That's be nasty.
You will suffer the destroyed cities. You will suffer the displaced lives. You will suffer the innocent being
agony.
Killed. You see, if you do that, then the societies that tolerate these terrorists, who are the war makers today, will be thinking twice about tolerating them. Think about Germany and Japan for a minute. Because of what we did to Germany and Japan, they were reluctant to raise up another Hitler. They were reluctant to raise up militant military leaders.
Which they weren't after World War I.
Oh, hell no, they weren't. We gave them a change of attitude, you see? And that should be the whole point of war.
And the Neville Chamberlains out there are what cause more tragedy.
Exactly.
In the name of peace,
right.
They cause more
right.
tragedy.
Right. And so in the end, by trying to be polite, if you will, or not messy about war and just have surgical strikes and stuff like that with air power, you're actually prolonging and intensifying the suffering that the civilians are feeling. Do you not think, excuse me, that the people who are living in northern Iraq and Syria would just as soon have an end to the violence, no matter what it took?
What?
I mean, it's either a slow death or a quick death, you might say, if you want to look at it that way. But at least you get it over with and you purge the area of that violence so that once again, free life can spring anew.
And Chris, too, you kind of show your enemy that you're a little bit cowardly. You're
yeah.
only going to send these surgical strikes. You're not going to risk any. You're not going to risk a bloody nose.
That's what Stein is saying here when he says the 43% global operating industrial military complex isn't. He's talking about
yeah.
basically the country
yeah.
isn't too big to fail, but it is perhaps too big to win, as our enemies understand. We have already told them we're not going to do what it takes to defeat them. So all they have to do is sit around and wait us out and make it as unpleasant for us in the meantime.
We're going to marginalize them. How big a threat is that?
And eventually we will go away. We do every time. And so the man's got a point. And somebody needs to stand up and say, look, ISIS is a problem. What we're doing now, these quote-unquote surgical strikes are not going to get it done. This is going to take a massive World War II-like effort, and we need to start putting it together now. And if in the process of putting it together, our enemy comes to their senses, then we will be glad to accept that. If not, then they will just have a matter of time before we come in there and we eradicate them. And anybody who's a civilian in that area, if you can, get out. If not, we will try to free you, but we aren't going to guarantee you not one thing.
And it may come up to the point where we tell the rest of the world, if you don't back us, the time's going to come when we're not going to back you.
Well, if we're going to go in there and do something, we should say, if you're not going to back us, then just get right on out of the way, or we're going to run you over too. Because we're going to go in there and we're going to take care of business. And if that's what our intent is to do, then we should do it. If that is not what our intent is to do, we got no business being there. Now, I thought with George W. Bush, he had that intent, and I believe he did. But he didn't have the intent to take it as far as it could have gone. And I do believe that had we taken care of business with both Iraq and Syria while we were in Iraq, excuse me, Iran and Syria while we were in Iraq, we wouldn't be looking at the violence that we're looking at today. But it would have taken a far larger force and a far more decisive attitude. And if we couldn't get that out of George W. Bush, there's no way we're going to get it out of Barack Hussein Obama. But we need to find somebody who does have it.
Well, I couldn't believe the American public that really kind of abandoned George Bush when he said, bring it on.
That was the right attitude.
That took the cojones to say that and say, look, I don't care how bad you think you are. We are so much better. Bring it on and we'll squash you.
And he got called
down for saying, bring it on, which is what he was supposed to say, and that answered everybody's question, especially the enemy.
Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. And unfortunately, one of those who called him on that was his wife. Okay, folks, we'll be right back. Oh, okay. Welcome back to the show.
We're talking wrestling.
That's right.
Yeah, Chris Masters is going to be with us in the next hour. You'll definitely want to stick around for that, folks. And I tell you what, we've got these tickets here, and why don't we go ahead and give them away? We've got a pair of tickets to the Taste of Apopka Food and Business Expo. We'll give them away to the first caller.
$40 worth of tickets.
$40 worth of tickets. That's right. To the first caller, two tickets to the Taste of Apopka. Now, it's Thursday evening. It starts at 5 o'clock, which is, of course, when we do our show. We'll be doing it there live by remote. And then it goes on several hours. So come on over, bring your appetite, and enjoy the great food at the CenturyLink campus right over here, just east of Apopka. And just west of Hunt Club Boulevard. For more information, if you would like to buy your tickets, if you can't get any free, you can call them at 407-886-1441. That's 407-886-1441. And that's the Apopka Chamber of Commerce. Or you can go to apopkachamber.org. That's apopkachamber.org to check all that out. And as I said, Colonel Danny McKnight is going to be with us that evening, as well as Mike McBath and Joe Ferrero. The promotions director here at the station is going to be a judge. They judge the food over there. They win awards and things. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So do come on out. And as I say, bring your appetite, because no matter what kind of food you like, there will be that food will be there. Believe me. And it will be good. So we do look forward to you joining us. Okay. It's now time for Nostradamus' pass, but since he's not here, Johnny Guns is going to pick up that ball and run with it.
That's right. Dennis left me some stories to go over with y'all. And first, even though he's not here, his presence is still felt. He posted a very special story on our Facebook page, and he wanted me to tease it. So if you want to find out what happens when a reporter tries to out-squat a squatter in Detroit, go to the American Adversaries Facebook page, and you'll be able to see the video and that story from Nostradamus.
Out-squat a squatter.
Out-squat a squatter. I don't know. Maybe that's why he didn't give me the details of the story. Maybe
They had these abandoned properties, a lot of them in Detroit up there, and people are squatting.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. And apparently a reporter, I don't want to ruin it. Just go see the video and see what this this very unique idea this reporter had. It's very cool.
And please like us while you're there.
Yes.
All right.
Story number one. The Wall Street Journal reported Thursday that, according to people briefed on the letter, Obama wrote a note to Iran's Supreme Leader Ayatollah al-Khamenei in the middle of last month and stressed that any cooperation dealing with ISIS was tied to Iran striking a deal over its nuclear program. A senior congressional source told Fox News that there is not anything definitive as to whether the letter even exists, but a source indicated that they don't doubt it's true because, as they say, quote, we've seen the president do it before, so there is a precedent. The congressional source told Fox News that the letter would upset the inroads they've made to make with the Sunni League, noting that the president should have informed Congress of this back channel, in fact, if it was going on. The source said this mucks everything up. I had to change a word there.
Change a letter.
Yeah. Republicans John McCain and Lindsey Graham issued a joint statement Thursday saying that it was outrageous while the cries of the moderate Syrian forces for greater U.S. assistance fall on deaf ears in the White House. President Obama is apparently urging Khamenei to join the fight against ISIS. Asked about the reported letter, White House Press Secretary Josh Ernst
Josh Not So Ernst,
that's right, would not confirm the report. He says, I'm not in a position to discuss private correspondence between the president and any world leader. He says, however, the U.S. policy towards Iran remains unchanged, that the U.S. will not cooperate militarily with Iran in that effort. We won't share intelligence with them.
Cop out.
Yeah, you know,
cop out.
Bobby Schieffer asked the president about the letter this morning, and he didn't deny it. There was a letter, you know, some sort of I call it a little love letter between the two. By the way, the Ayatollah has not to this point, and Barack has written him several letters now, has not written back. But Evidently, he did write the letter, and that's taking deconflicting, I think, a little bit too far. But the president did not deny it this morning. As a matter of fact, he turned it into a little filibuster about how it was, you know, his policies that brought the Iranians, you know, the sanctions brought the Iranians to the table.
And spit it however he
can. Yeah, so, you know, he's, in other words, the impression that he was trying to leave is that he's got it under control. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, according to the article, Obama has written to Khomeini four times now since taking office.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like you said, he hasn't replied back,
yeah,
which should just tell you, he's not that into you, Obama.
Right. But
take a hit.
You're going to get charged with stalking. But this, of course, really makes the Saudi Arabians and other Sunni Arab nation states in the region extremely nervous. And that, I guess, escapes our dear and glorious president. Real quickly, Larry of Orlando is the winner of the tickets. And Larry, we'll be seeing you Thursday at the Taste of Apopka. Thanks for calling tonight.
John, why didn't see us?
Yep.
All right. Story number two, Republican Duncan Hunter, good friend of Nostra Dennis, said that Wednesday that sources have told him the U.S. military unsuccessfully tried to pay a ransom for Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl. In a November 5th letter to Chuck Hagel, Hunter wrote, quote, "It's been brought to my attention that a payment was made to an Afghan intermediary who disappeared with the money and failed to facilitate Bergdahl's release and return," unquote. Hunter said that, according to sources, the payment was made between January and February 2014 through Joint Special Operations Command, whose activities are mostly classified. Hunter did not identify his sources, but Hunter asked Hagel to immediately inquire within the JSOC to determine the specific order of events and to confirm whether a payment of any kind was considered and or paid. If the allegations are true, it could contradict a longstanding U.S. policy not to pay for ransom of hostages. The Pentagon reiterated its denial this past Wednesday that any cash was paid to secure Bergdahl's release, according to the Wall Street Journal.
Well, not if somebody ran off with the money.
Yeah, I guess not. By the way, I believe it was the U.K. Reported and I believe this was on Soundbite RX a while back, that what actually happened was we basically gave money to the Qataris, who then gave it to the Haqqani network for the release of Bergdahl, and supposedly it went through. By the way, those five that were released from Guantanamo Bay are already getting back involved in the fighting going on in northern Iraq. Thank you very much.
Well, I thought the government was going to come out with information on that Bergdahl release, but they haven't yet. Is that correct?
Well, this is part of the ongoing investigation into the whole thing. And Duncan Hunter is the chair of the the House Armed Services Committee, I believe. And he's definitely looking into it. But it was a squirrely deal from the start. Mm-hmm. There's no question there was some sort of money transaction going on, whether it actually got to the right quote-unquote people or not, I don't know, but there's a lot yet to be said about that.
Yeah, and on both sides, they're like you said, it was a squirrely deal, and both sides of the aisle are kind of up in arms about this because the exchange was made in secrecy, you know, and ignoring the law to inform members of Congress 30 days ahead of any detainee transfer.
Right. It has let's just say it smells a little bit like the Iran-Contra thing, where you're kind of going through a third country, but you're still dealing with the terrorist type things. All right. All right, Johnny.
All right. Finally, a little more lighthearted on the Nostra Dennis Predicts the Past. A mom petitions the Girl Scouts to drop Nestle partnership.
No!
Yes. The mom says that Nesquik Girl Scout cookie drink promotes childhood obesity.
Ha!
This is Mom Monica Serratos. She's questioning the limited edition Girl Scout cookie flavored drinks from Nestle Nesquik. She said she was in the grocery store and her daughters, first and third graders, who are also Girl Scouts, saw the drink and wanted Mom to get it for them. Well, she was shocked to find out that it contained 48 grams of sugar per bottle, which a serving of that has more than twice the amount of sugar children are supposed to consume in a full day. When Serato showed her daughters the label, she says their faces literally dropped. She says she thinks the Girl Scouts should be helping to promote healthy habits, not sugary drinks to children. So she started a petition on change.org to convince Girl Scouts to end the partnership. She's gotten 6,000 people to sign her petition so far.
Hmm.
She says Nesquik has Nestle has replied by saying Nesquik has a limited partnership with Girl Scouts USA. It borrows the fun and flavor equity of Girl Scout cookies and applies it to a 14-ounce ready-to-drink package made with the adult consumer in mind, which Serato says they're not packaging this thing to adults because, she says, we're not interested in this little brown bunny on the bottle.
Hey!
Well, what about the cookies?
Hey, I got a little honey bear thing at home that I pour my honey out of.
Yeah, but what about the cookies? The cookies have got to be just as high calorie.
As long as they leave the cookies alone, I don't mind.
Get rid of the drinks. Just keep the cookies.
Just keep the cookies. Keep your hands off them cookies. All right, keep your hands off that dial because we got 2 more hours to go.
Oh, my gosh. It just seems like the last hour went by so fast I can't even imagine. But the next 2 hours will be even faster. Don't go away.
Celebrating 50 years as Apopka's hometown station. 1520 WBZW, Apopka's hometown station. A division of
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Blair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They team with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Blair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Feeling pretty good out there, folks. The skies are beginning to clear. It's going to be a nice cool evening and a beautiful day tomorrow, I'm sure, with clear skies and cooler temperatures. All right, stick around with us because we still have 2 full hours to go of the American Adversaries Classic Sunday Evening Edition. We're going to be doing our Who Said That contest a little bit earlier tonight. We'll do it in the next segment instead of the start of the second half hour of this hour so that we can give a little bit more time to Chris Masters, WWE superstar.
Yeah.
And he's got a fascinating story to tell, so we'll be spending some time with Chris tonight. And then he'll stay over through the break and spend some time with us and Sonny. Patricia Summerlin, our California glow girl. And you can join us as well, 407-774-8255 is the number. And I am Christopher Hart, along with Lair Adams and Johnny Guns. We're in the studio here live with you. Carl Jackson will be back next week. Nostra Dennis is going to be back with us Tuesday. Jeff Sinis is on the bridge, so we are in good hands tonight. I want to talk about something that was quite astonishing, got very little attention because of the nature of the story. But I saw an article in the Wall Street Journal this past Monday. So it doesn't qualify for WTF News, although maybe it should in other ways. But it's an article by Douglas Irwin, who is a professor of economics at the Political Economy Project at Dartmouth College, big Ivy League school. It's entitled The Ultimate Global Anti-Poverty Program. Listen to this, folks, and tell me if this isn't just fabulous news. I quote now from the article. The World Bank reported on October 9th this year that the share of the world population living in extreme poverty had fallen to 15% in 2011 from 36% in 1990. Let's just let this soak in just a little bit. fallen, the world extreme poverty rate had fallen to 15% in 2011 from 36% in 1990. In other words, in 1990, fully one-third plus of the world's population lived in extreme abject poverty.
Yeah, but they don't have cell phones and cable.
Well, a lot of them do now, because now only 15% of the world's population, which has grown, by the way. Mm-hmm. So in terms of actual numbers, it's even better news than that. The Labor Office of the World Bank reported that the number of workers in the world earning less than a dollar and a quarter a day has fallen to 375 million from in 2013 from 811 million in 1991. Such stunning news seems to have escaped public notice, but it means something extraordinary. And this is think about this statement right here. The past 25 years have witnessed the greatest reduction in global poverty in the history of the world. Now we get to the point of why this hasn't been being reported. You would think, you know, the liberals would just be dancing in the streets.
All the TV networks would have that.
You would think, and they would want to know, how can we do more of the same so that we get rid of the other 15%? But there is the crux of the problem. And I read on now. To what should this be attributed? Official organizations, noting the trend, have tended to waffle, but let's be blunt. The credit goes to the spread of capitalism. Over the past few decades, developing countries have embraced economic policy reforms that have cleared the way for private enterprise. China and India are leading the way. In 1978, China began allowing private agricultural plots. You could own your own farm. You could own your own business, things that you could not do. They ended the state monopoly on foreign trade. The result has been phenomenal economic growth. In 1991, India started dismantling what they called the License Raj. The License Raj was the government needed to approve every startup business. So, of course, that would cost you a lot of money and bribes and a lot of time to start up any kind of business. It didn't matter if you were going to pull a rickshaw down the street or build a rocket. You had to do the License Raj. And this is that License Raj, by the way, is rampant throughout Europe. For instance, in Italy, what was it we reported on the show a while back? I think it was the WTF News. It took about 40 years, and he finally got, after he was already retirement age, he got approval to open his business.
Oh, yeah.
If that ain't a License Raj, I don't know what is.
It's another name for mafia.
Exactly. Well, the countries that are turning away from that, they're booming. Their economies are booming, and they're pulling their poorest of the poor up out of poverty. And it is because of capitalism. And, of course, we've known that if you paid attention in this country. I mean, just look at this country. Did we get to where we are today because of socialism? No.
Government did that for you.
No, we got to where we are today where we can even entertain thoughts of being socialist because of capitalism. And by the way, that follows along with Marxist philosophy. You would not be able to have socialism were it not for capitalism. It's part of the progression of nature, according to Marx. It's a Hegelian view of nature, if you will. And so the capitalist way of life, obviously, is the best way to bring about. And oh, by the way, the good news goes on. You know, this idea that the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer? Well, when you look at the wealth in the world, that is not true. The wealth is actually being distributed more equally, thanks once again to capitalism. Because if you don't have capitalism, you have this really hierarchical structure where you can never rise in it.
It's a buddy system.
It's like royalty. If you're born into the right class, you're going to be living a privileged life. If you're not, you're going to be paying for the privileged life for the privileged few. And excuse me, they will take care of you. They will give you a house. Mm-hmm. They will give you some food. They will give you some bandages. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that they won't give you is liberty and freedom. And that's why these countries are turning away from that. And the results are astounding. Yes, not only have we reduced poverty in the world, but we now have a far more equitable distribution of the wealth. And that's even with guys like Warren Buffett and Bill Gates having $40-50 billion. When you think about it, in the overall scheme of things, that really isn't a whole lot. Sounds odd to say that.
Yeah.
And I sure wish I had just a little piece of one of their billions.
Yeah, I'd take their problems.
Yeah, but when you think about the wealth that the rest of the world controls, it ain't nothing but chicken feed. That's all it is, chicken feed. When you imagine how capitalism has spread wealth around this world, how people in India and China are living in modern-day housing within the past few decades.
Sewage systems.
Yeah. And it's even happening in Africa, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. It's even happening. That's kind of the last continent, you know, the last, if you will, of the abject poverty. But even there, where the countries have instituted these reforms, their economies are booming.
Chris, look what happened to the Middle East with capitalism. I mean, they were starting to thrive. The Shah, the mean old nasty Shah in Iran, had his country on the right path.
Same with South America.
Yes.
In South America, where you have the socialist countries like Venezuela and Argentina, they're basically basket cases. But in Colombia and I believe Brazil and a couple of the other countries down there where they have instituted freer market reforms, their economies are booming.
Yep.
In Colombia, the oil market is now so big that it's beginning to get the attention of the rebels. They want to get their hands on the oil. And it's only because the governments have basically the one thing that they have found that that is the most successful of the capitalistic reforms is simply government getting out of the way.
Well, I think I told you that I'm losing my health insurance, and my health insurance company is shutting down here in the United States to go to another country because they want health insurance companies and people that know how to run health insurance companies in other countries. Their arms are open.
And look at Singapore. We've had Dr. Desmond on the show talking about Singapore, where he is right now today. It's what is it, six? It's at 6:15 in the morning over there, literally on the other side of the world. And in a lot of ways, they literally are on the other side of the world because here we are moving towards socialism with these boobs in this administration who are oblivious to this information. All right? It's staring them in the face. They know this, but it doesn't, you know, go along with their worldview, so they ignore it. But over there in Singapore, where they are embracing where they are embracing these reforms, it's a booming economy. Where if you want to start a business, you don't have to go through the license raj. You don't even have to file taxes for 3 years. Not only not pay them, you don't even have to file.
And they'll give you money to start your business.
They'll give you money to study starting a business. Now, that's what I call a government helping the business community, not hurting the business community.
That's what made Australia
right.
grow.
Right. Okay, it looks like we're coming up on the break. When we come back, I want to juxtapose that against something that happened in the Supreme Court this week, which shows you where our administration's head is. And it's a place that's very unpleasant, I would say. And we'll do our Who Said That contest as well, so you don't want to go away. We got a lot more to do tonight.
Yeah, we got wrestlers coming up, too, besides the beautiful Sunny, our glow girl from California. We got a buddy of hers. That would be Chris Masters, of the Master Lock.
Yeah, some a good-looking man for you women out there.
Yeah, but he's also now going the political way a little bit. We'll talk to him about that. Love those big muscles are helping the right cause. We'll be back.
Ho, Hey, folks, this is professional wrestler and WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and I know wrestling. And for the best in political professional wrestling, listen to the American Adversaries, tough guy.
All right, welcome back to the American Adversaries. Ladies and gentlemen, it's that time when I tell you to pull out your cell phones or get that telephone that's right next to your chair or the one on the wall, the old dial rotary phone, and get ready to punch in these numbers. Don't you miss the dial rotary phone?
Oh,
I do.
Yeah.
You hit the nine and you go shh. We had one of those. I loved that thing when I was
it's
a
better
kid.
Than, hey, Mabel, can you get Johnny for me?
All right, get ready to dial this number, 407-774-8255. That number again, 407-774-8255. And you know, whenever I start out a segment talking about this, you know it's time to win great prizes with our Who Sent That contest. Take it away, Christopher Hart.
All right, thanks so much there, Johnny Guns. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us once again. It is time for our Who Said That contest. You know how we play this. We read a quote. You simply call us up and tell us who said it at that phone number. And once again, this is being sponsored by Cafe Positano, the finest Italian restaurant in all Central Florida. You know, with the holidays coming up and everything, it'd be a great place to spend some time with your family or that special person. Mm-hmm. You can make reservations or just walk in. They have casual dining and fine dining. 407-774-8080 is the number at Cafe Positano. That's 407-774-8080. And please say hello to Pasquale Barba when you go over there. He'll be looking to talk to you and get to know you a little bit. And you'll also win. You'll win a $20 gift card to Cafe Positano if you get the quote right, the author right of the quote, that is. And you'll also win a My Liberty Threads t-shirt. These are great t-shirts, folks. They're quality t-shirts, American-made and America-proud. Okay, so it's short, sweet, and to the point. You know, we had today's the 25th anniversary of the people beginning to bring down the Berlin Wall. And by the way, folks, when we go out of the show tonight, we're going to play about a minute and a half or so of that famous speech by Ronald Reagan.
Bring down this wall.
Tear down this wall. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. We're going to play that at the very end of our show tonight, folks. So you'll definitely want to stick around for that. That'll be after Lair's closing comments. But, today's the 25th anniversary of that. And then, of course, we had this big, huge election victory for the Republicans, which was mainly a repudiation of the president, which we said that very next day, and which now all the pundits are saying. But in light of that, I thought that this quote was apropos, if you will, and given what's going on in the Middle East with these wars as well. So who said this right here, folks? If you know, give us a call at 407-774-8255. Who said, and I quote, success is never final. That's it. If you know who said that, give us a call. Success is never final, okay? But if you've won something the last couple of months or so, let's let somebody else get in on this this prize package. So give us a call at 407-774-8255 if you think you know who said success is never final. And if you're the first person to call and no one gets it right, which I don't think has happened yet, you will nonetheless be declared the winner. And we got lots of consolation, probably, what do you call them, going away gifts or whatever that was, Lair. We got
consolation works for it, you know.
Yeah,
you showed up and played the game.
Yeah,
so
we got consolation prizes. We got bottles of Roxy Pacifics, which if the winner hasn't gotten a bottle of that, they'll get a bottle of that too. So give us a call, 407-774-8255.
And they've got some specials going on. Chris.
That's right, yeah. Roxy Pacific, great stuff. Success is never final. Who said that? Let us know. And I do think it's quite apropos. That's one reason why we say politics is a lot like professional wrestling, and we'll be talking to Chris Masters in the next half hour. We'll get his take on this. But, of course, in professional wrestling, no match is ever final. Every match just goes to set up the next one. And that's what you have in politics. Nothing is ever final. No party is ever fully in control. All these stories that you hear occasionally about how one party, when they win a decisive election, like when Barack Obama won in 2008, how, you know, the other party was now in disfavor forever,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, well, guess who, you know, saw right through that? Well, of course, the American adversaries. That's why I said on the show a little over 4 years ago, our very first show, I said, if Barack Obama were in this studio and the offer still stands, you know, I'd grab him by the shoulders, yank him over, and kiss him right on the lips. No tongues, thank you, but right on the lips. Because he has been the perfect liberal. I mean, he has brought about liberal policies in a fashion that liberals operate. You know, we focus a lot of our, say, scorn, I suppose, at Barack Obama. But really, as I've said many a times, he's just a symptom.
He's a product of it.
Exactly. He's a symptom. He's a product of it. He's not the real cause. The real cause is the ideology of progressivism, liberalism, slash communism.
You know, Chris, I sometimes think that people like Hillary are even more dangerous because they... I don't think Barack believes it. I think people like Hillary really believe.
Well, actually, I think
to their core.
Actually, I do think that Barack believes it. And by the way, the offer doesn't stand for Hillary.
You'd rather kiss Barack on the lips than Hillary. I don't blame you.
Well,
lips would freeze if you kissed Hillary.
For one, I'll go back to what you said about her being more dangerous because it's not so obvious to see.
Yeah,
you see what I'm trying to say?
Subtlety.
Yeah, they hide it better. Barack Obama, it's in your face.
Yeah.
It's like if you don't like it, too bad. It's like this past
week.
Which is
honest.
Yeah, well, in a way it is, and he's doing us a favor, don't you see? This is why I said I would kiss him. It's because by being his arrogant liberal self, he's showing everybody this is what it's all about. Now, if that's what you like, then okay. But if that's not what you like, then we need to start dealing with it, and here's the problem. People don't like it.
He's like the canary in the coal mine.
He is. He definitely is. I do believe so. Once again, success is never final. What the Republicans need to take away from that election the other day is, like I said, we said the day after, and that is, it was a thrashing of Obama. It was not an acceptance in any way, shape, or form of a Republican platform, because there was none, or of the conservative ideology, because there was no real argument for that. But now the Republicans can begin to do that. They can begin to show us their platform, which supposedly, at least according to Karl Rove, they do have. They have plans of how they're going to approach all this.
We'll see.
But the main thing that it should be is, and this I think goes back to something what Karl was saying yesterday, and I don't mean to put words in his mouth, but what they need to do is they need to pass legislation, not govern, pass legislation that demonstrates their commitment to the conservative capitalistic ideology. And then when they are berated by the president and the Democrats and the media for doing so, they stand up and they make their arguments for it. And if they're smart and if they're savvy and if they read their Wall Street Journal, perhaps they could also bring in this World, you know, Bank report, which shows that capitalism and free trade and open markets is what reduces poverty around the world, not the opposite. Not these concocted efforts to redistribute wealth. Those are the sorts of things that ensure, that entrench, that guarantee the ongoing numbers of people in poverty and greater numbers of people in poverty. And if people in China and India can understand this, I certainly hope that people in the United States of America can. I know it's not being taught on college campuses. Do you know that there was a poll done in 2011, and I would presume that these numbers would have changed a little bit by now, given the situation with the economy. But, I'll give you these poll numbers when we come back. They're not very encouraging having to do with our youth. But like I say, perhaps they're getting the message now. And also, when we get back, we have some contest, people who think that they know who said success is never final. If you think you know who said it, call us at 407-774-8255. You are listening to the American Adversaries. We'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right, you are listening to the American Adversaries, and that was one WWE champion, B. Brian Blair, and then later on in the show, we're going to have on live with us, Chris Masters. All right, we got several callers who think that they know who said success is never final. That is our Who Said That quote for tonight, so we're going to go ahead and go to the call lines right now, and if you're on the line, please stay with us. And let's go to David from Longwood first. David, who said success is never final? Do you think you know?
I'm going to guess Winston Churchill.
It was old Winnie.
That was easy.
Yeah, there you go. And that was Johnny. How did you know that? Are you a big fan?
In today's Wall Street Journal or over the weekend, there's an article on a new biography written about him by the mayor of London named Boris Johnson. My daughter lives in London, and I've always had a keen interest in Winston Churchill. I think he's probably a singular politician that we'll never see again. And anyway, I was browsing through that, and that quote was not in there, but there are several other quotes about his proclivities, including his peccadilloes. One time he was in the loo, as they say over there, on the lavatory, and it was told that the Lord Privy of the Seal wanted to talk to him, and he said back to his aide, "Tell him that I'm sealed in the privy."
He was great.
Of course, the one about the lady, yeah, member of parliament who told him that he was drunk, and he admitted he was drunk, but that she was ugly, and he'd be sober in the morning, but he'd still be ugly.
He had a great way with words, didn't he?
He was unbelievable.
Yeah. Now, David, can you tell me why there's, in England right now, there's such a negativity towards Maggie Thatcher and to some extent, too, Churchill?
I read the article too in the Wall Street Journal, and he kind of addresses that. It's sort of the same problem we have over here. The students aren't being told history. They aren't being taught history in school.
They did mention that. I forgot totally that the kids are aware that there's a figure, but had no clue as to what the significance of his achievements were. And of course he was turned out by his own people in 45 right after the war. He lost his parliamentary seat, for that matter. And people have short memories, don't they?
They sure do. As a matter of fact, George H.W. Bush kind of took a little solace in that part of history, you know, when he got beat by Bill Clinton, because here he was, you know, just won a big war himself, and they both found themselves on the unemployment line the next time the elections rolled around.
Yeah.
So
people are fickle.
Well,
fickle and very facile, and it's a shame.
But in
Churchill's case, I mean, I can't think of, well, he and Eisenhower and a few others, but I think he stands above all in terms of, well, Roosevelt had his, things that you could say were.
But he had his moments.
No one in my mind has had as much courage or as much vision or as much fortitude.
Well, he was on the line, guys. He was ready to lose his nation. That nation was ready to fall. We haven't had a president our nation was ready to fall like he had to deal with.
Well,
absent Churchill, I think that the Nazis would have taken over all of England, and who knows what we'd be doing, goose-stepping to rap music right now. I'm not sure what.
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. Churchill was a influential man in that point in history. Had it not been for him, you're absolutely right. England probably would have fallen to the Nazis.
Yeah.
All right. Well, David, thank you for being out there. We appreciate you calling. Have you gotten a bottle of Roxy Pacifics?
I have not.
Well, then you're going to get a free bottle to go along with your T-shirt and your gift card. It'll come in separate packages, but it's great stuff. It's good for whatever ails your skin, whether it's a chronic condition or if it's just something like a mosquito bite or a cut or a burn.
Never be without it.
Well, I'm a regular listener, and I've listened to you guys since the beginning, and the show's only gotten better in the content and the professionalism, so keep it up. It's a singular show in our market, so we're really glad to have.
Thank you, David.
Absolutely, we appreciate that, man. Thank you so much.
You're welcome,
David.
Buddy.
All right. Okay. All right.
Bye now.
All right. Thank you so much. Goodbye. It was Winston Churchill who said success is never final, and you know it applied to him in his own life. When you think about it, as David just said, you know, he had this great success, and yet it didn't do him much good at the next election. So
Reagan had successes, Chris. And there were so many people on the other side that they wouldn't just not only acknowledge the success, they would damn him for his successes.
Yeah. it does, you know, bear remembering that whether it's in politics, love, or war, or whatever in life, you know, success is never final. It's kind of, you know, athletes understand this probably better than anybody. They know that they're only as good as their last game. And, you know, the next game, if you go out there and you play lousy, nobody remembers all the great games you had. They just remember the last one when you played lousy. Mm-hmm. So just ask the Bucks. Our poor Bucks.
What a dig on the Bucks.
Oh, my word. I thought maybe they'd pull it out today.
Or the Magic. Yeah. Or
snatch the
Jaguars.
Defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that. Okay, I want to go back to this theme about the world poverty rate, you know, being lowered dramatically from one-third of the people in this world being in abject poverty to now one-sixth, less than one-sixth in poverty, cut in the last 30 years
people,
because of capitalism.
That's right. And, Chris, there are people that would say that's wrong.
Yeah, of course.
That's so wrong.
Well, yeah, because it doesn't...
Because their way didn't work.
It flies in the way... Exactly. Yeah. And here I'm going to get ready to tell you about their way. But when you think about it, over those last 30 years, I mean, what set all of it in motion? Reagan tax cuts. It all started with Reagan and his tax cuts, which unleashed an economic boom in this country like the world had never seen before.
Chris, on Fox the other day, Bob Beckel, how can you get more liberal than Bob Beckel, was saying we have to reform our tax system. He's all for a flat tax.
Well, I guess, you know, there's hope for all of us.
Bob Beckel.
If he's coming around. But here's how our administration wants to do things. Have you guys heard of Captain John Yates and Miss Katie?
No.
All right, maybe I should say it this way. Captain John Yates and the Miss Katie.
Still
doesn't ring a bell. Okay. The Miss Katie is a fishing boat. It sails out, sails out of Florida here, and Captain John Yates has been the captain of the boat. Now, back in, let's see, when did this happen? Oh, let's see, it was a couple of years ago. The Miss Katie was out fishing off the coast of Florida with Mr. Yates as the captain, and it was the boat was stopped by the Florida, let's see.
Marine Patrol?
The Florida... Oh, God, I thought
bad
I had...
guys. Government bad guys.
Basically, it was the Florida fishing people who were out there checking to see if his catch was proper. With the regulations in the Gulf, in around the Florida, you can only... They were fishing for grouper. And the grouper had to be so long, they had to be 20 inches long for them to be legally caught. If they're smaller than that, you're supposed to throw them back. Well, when the officials raided the boat, if you will, inspected the boat, they found 72 fish out of their big haul. They had thousands of them. They found 72 that they said were too small. So they wrote the captain a citation, and they told him to head back into port where the 72 fish would be gathered as evidence for against his citation. Well, when they got back to port, there were only 69 of the too small grouper on the ship, on the boat, on the Miss Katie. So what happened was, a couple of years later, the Justice Department decided to prosecute the captain under the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. Now, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act was passed in 2002 to prevent people in government and corporations from destroying documents and other things that could be used as evidence in a court case.
We're talking three fish, Chris?
Three grouper.
We're talking three fish out of thousands, Chris?
Yes. And... out of the 72 that were evidence, they still turned in 69. So it wasn't as though the government didn't have the quote-unquote evidence to prove that the guys had caught fish too small to catch and didn't throw them back, but they didn't have all 72 of the 69.
And we could not consider a miscount. I'm sorry.
No.
That's stupid.
According to the prosecutor, they were thrown overboard. Now, why the other 69 weren't thrown overboard along with them, the prosecutor could not answer. However, Captain Yates was convicted in a federal court. He was sentenced to 30 days in jail, even though he was facing up to 20 years in federal prison.
Yeah.
He was sentenced to 30 days and 3 years of probation, basically. So he appealed it. And one of the appeals courts upheld the conviction, but another appeals court struck down the conviction. So okay. It landed in the Supreme Court last week.
Florida Supreme Court.
No, the United States Supreme Court, where the justices will have to issue
over
a decision.
Over three fish.
Over three fish and 20 years that the man could have gone to prison. And you had most of the conservatives, actually most of the court, including Stephen Breyer, basically incredulous that the government would actually... You know, charges. Exactly. The government would press the case. But then you had Elena Kagan who was saying, well, it's possible that we do need to prosecute cases like this so that people don't destroy evidence. All right, folks.
Three fish, people.
All right, don't let your goose get cooked. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to The American Adversaries, ladies and gentlemen. You know, we call ourselves the champions of political professional wrestling. Obviously, talking is not one of my strong points this evening. So let's get right to our guest and welcome into our ring, the masterpiece, Chris Masters.
Yo, what is up?
How you doing, Chris?
Three fish.
Can you believe that nonsense? Over three fish, they were going to send this guy to jail for 30 days, and he faced 20 years.
Well, I'm just wondering why they had all the small fish. Was it just a lack of big fish that day, and they figured, I will make up for it with a ton of small fish?
No, you know, they pull in these big old nets, and they have all kinds, all sizes fish in there. They're supposed to have these little, like, more or less... rulers, if you will, to make sure the fish are all the right size, but you know,
it's determined. So you're able if the fish is a certain size, you're able to catch it and keep it, and if it's a baby fish or a smaller fish, you're supposed to put it back in. Am I correct?
That's the idea. Yes.
Yeah, Chris. Yeah. Larry what's Adams here.
What's the reasoning for that? Is it just their youth? You know.
Well, they don't want to overfish the waters. They want to make sure that there are enough young fish that they'll have a crop the next year. And there is a certain amount of logic to that. But they're dealing with so many fish that you're going to catch up some of the smaller fish in the nets. Now, the nets are designed to where they're not supposed to catch the real small fish. but they will nonetheless pull in a few. And sometimes they get through. You know, the guys on the deck basically have nets full of hundreds, if not thousands, of fish. And they're supposed to sort them all out and throw back the ones too small. Well, sometimes they don't get them all. Obviously, though.
Oh, and this guy almost went to jail for that?
Went to jail for it. That's right.
Yeah, like, what the hell? Like, who wants that job?
Yeah, Chris, you know what? It's kind of like
He probably got within a good rate. You know, whatever was left over was probably a hell of a good percentage compared to what they normally bring in, I'm sure, you know?
Well, that's the whole point. And when he takes it to the canneries aren't going to want those fish because they'll be afraid to be caught with them.
Oh, they suffer cat food.
Yeah, so, you know, it's not like they're out there trying to catch a lot of little fish just to make up their poundage quota because they don't do them any good if they can't sell them. So, you know, it's just a matter of, some, you know, make it through, you know, and find, you know, a few small fish in with the bigger fish and... It's just a part of the, you know, commercial fishing.
Yeah, no.
But this is an instance of government gone wild. And the point that I was making here is that our nation seems to be going in the direction where we want to make it near impossible for someone to make a living in a business, whereas the rest of the world seems, well, at least a good portion of the rest of the world, including China and India, are going in the other direction. And their economies are booming as a result.
There's lots of examples of that. One off the top of my head, obviously being a California resident, is medical marijuana dispensaries. I keep hearing stories from friends of friends or whatnot of dispensaries being closed down. And it's not even about closing them down. It's the way they do it. They literally just take everything. They take all the marijuana. They take all the money and... You know, they're out, and, like, it just doesn't make sense. It's like, It's robbery.
It just failed here.
It's worse than robbery because they threaten these people with jail time on top of it. Not only will they come in and confiscate the stuff. Now, this is what Chris is talking about, folks. In California, they do have medical marijuana, which was approved by the legislature, by the state. But the federal authorities don't recognize it. And there may be a lesson in that for you folks here in Florida who want to pass these medical marijuana laws. What the feds do is they come in and they raid these dispensaries. They take all the stuff and then they threaten the owners with prosecution, and they have to. Many of them are indicted, and these are federal crimes being committed. And it's just the federal government is just run amok, and is running all over the population. Chris, you have been in professional wrestling for pretty much all your adult life. I understand Johnny was telling me that you went into training to be a professional wrestler at the age of 16. Is that correct?
I decided that I wanted to do it at the age of 16, basically, and I started working out like crazy and, you know, really focusing on that, and then I started training, and coincidentally, I started actually the same day as John Cena, so we started the same day together.
Wow.
And then about 2 months in, I fractured my ankle on a leapfrog, and, like, it was pretty messed up, so I ended up having to have surgery on it, because there was a fracture, and I continued to practice on it. I didn't know how bad it was. And then, you know, I just went back to the drawing board, kind of. I was like, you know, I'm not ready yet. I'm 16. I'm not going to get a deal right now. And, you know, I could see that Cena and this other guy named Basil were about to get deals. So, you know, I just was kind of like, you know, let me recover from this. I'll focus on the gym. I'll focus on training. And then I'll come back when the time's right, you know. And I ended up coming back at 19. And then, you know, the rest is history. I got signed at 19, and then I was on my way.
Yeah, and you made it to the WWE superstar status, and with your master lock. Jeff tells me only one person ever broke your master lock, and I remember, you know, seeing the contests when you would have the opposing fella sit in a chair, and you would put him in. Basically, we used to call it the full Nelson. Yeah, and you'd lock him in. How many times did you ever in your career get that move broken?
Well, the only really documented time that it was ever broken was Bobby Lashley. So that was like the one. I mean, there's been some others that have been debated, but officially Bobby Lashley was the only one to ever break that. And, you know, he was the right guy at the time, you know, I'd say. I mean, considering what he was going into at that point. And, you know, it's good for him, too, that he's back in the business. So, you know, obviously you still got a passion for it. But Bobby Lashley's the guy.
Now, how did you settle on that as your closing move? Was it just natural?
Well, I mean, coincidentally, I actually used it as a bouncer a lot, as a restraint hold. So, basically, you know, I'd used it before professional wrestling, but I never thought of it as a finisher because it was a very basic thing, and wrestling had gotten to the point where it was very, you know, the moves were so
was it flamboyant.
But, like, at the same time, when I entered WWE, they were trying to trail back and recondition to the fans to a little bit more old school, and that's kind of where the full Nelson came into play, you know what I mean? Like, I even had my doubts about it, you know, I thought it was just maybe a little too wasn't flashy enough or whatever, but, you know, given the amount of TV time they put behind it and the person doing it, obviously me, you know, it ended up working out, you know, and it's a legit move. I mean, I've had guys pass out with it before, so.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, you know, the other wrestlers probably didn't like a whole lot being put into that move. But obviously, you made it into quite the move, because not only would you lock the guys into it, but then you'd sort of shake them around the ring like a rag doll and you really show off your strength.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, I mean, it's effective, man. Like I said, I mean, I've used it basically most of my adult life. So, I mean, you know, for me, you know, even if I was to get in a street fight, I'm sure I'd be looking, you know, I'd throw a couple blows, but I'd be looking for the hold, you know what I mean? That wrestler
right.
would come out of me where I'd be trying to take him down, and whether it was a full Nelson or a chin lock or something, like, I'm going for the pass out.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And is it true that Jeff told me that you rescued your mom recently?
About a little over a year ago, yeah, there was a, you know, in a nutshell, basically, there was a crazy nut that lived next door that barricaded her in the house. And when I had gotten a call from one of the neighbors, so I came over and he was speaking, like, you know, really crazy stuff through the door, and he had it locked and he wouldn't let me in, and he had her barricaded inside. And he was saying all kinds of crazy stuff, like, she's my mom and I'm her son now. And then, you know, eventually the cops started trying to break the door down, and he set fire to the place. And that's where kind of I stepped in. And, yeah, I took the hose, put it through the hole they made in the window where the fire was emanating. And then I went over to the other side, and I knew what room my mom was in, but there was a tree block in the windows. So I basically, like, ripped this tree out of the ground to clear a path so they could break those windows. And then I pulled my mom out of it. So, and then it became, like, national news and international news the next day. It was pretty crazy. Like,
yeah. Well, yeah.
All kinds of people calling me. But, you know.
That was no yearling that you yanked up out of the ground. That was a pretty good-sized tree.
Yeah, it was no joke. Yeah, it scratched me up real bad, too, and everything. But, you know, thank God I was here. You know, I could have easily been traveling somewhere like I usually am. And, you know, the cops, not to get down on the cops or anything, but they wouldn't have gotten it done with the protocol that they were going about, you know, because they couldn't even, by the time they got the door down, it was barricaded so much that they couldn't get through, and then smoke was burrowing out. So,
wow.
Like, they didn't even progress. And that's when I had that moment where it was like, oh, my God, my mom could die, like for real. And it really hit me. And that's when I went into, like, you know, as they would say, hero mode, basically. You know, people were calling it hero mode. I just went nuts and made sure, like, I got to make sure she gets out of there. You know what I mean? If they're not going to do it, I got to make sure I do it.
And you did it, too, yanking a tree out of the ground. All right, hey, Chris, if you'll stay with us, we got to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk to you some more about the business of wrestling today and how you got to where you like to be talking about politics. That seems to be, for some, a stretch, but for us, it's only logical because we like in politics to professional wrestling. Folks, we'll be right back.
Celebrating 50 years as Apopka's hometown station. 1520 WBZW. Apopka's hometown station. A division of...
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Blair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They team with lifelong radio pro Nostradamus. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostradamus, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Welcome back, folks. That's right. We're entering hour three of our three-hour Sunday evening tour, the American Adversaries Classic Edition. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow for the drive time version, Monday through Friday, live at 5. You are listening to us on AM 660, The Answer, coming to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. Lair Adams, Christopher Hart here, along with Johnny Guns. Jeff Sinis is on the bridge. And as we've told you folks repeatedly, we liken politics to professional wrestling. You have the theater that goes on in the ring, and then, of course, the real decisions are made off stage, if you will, and then you have the announcers, aka the media, who are there to tell us what the scripted storyline is all about. So oftentimes we bring on professional wrestlers and politicians to help us make our point. And tonight we have two professional wrestlers on the line with us right now. We have Chris Masters, King of the Master Lock, and he's with us on the line, as well as our girl, Sunny Patricia Summer.
Summerlin, our California glow girl. So I want to go back first to Chris, and then we'll bring Sonny in on this. Chris Masters, you wrestled for the WWE. You've wrestled for other federations. Do you see the WWE maintaining its prominence, or do you see at some point perhaps the WWE fading and other federations becoming stronger?
Well, let me start by saying hello, Sonny.
Sonny, are you there? Sonny, the California glow girl.
Hello, can you hear me?
There she is.
I am here in wonderful Arizona.
Chris just said hello. Can you hear Chris on the other line?
I sure can. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Now, she's a L.A. girl herself. Is that where you live in California, Chris?
Yeah, she's in Arizona now, though, right? You just said Arizona. Is it hot over there?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was only 85 today. So, to my understanding, it's a lot like L.A. weather right now.
Yeah, it's pretty hot over here.
That's a bummer. Plus, you guys need rain.
It's coming. It's coming. It got cool for a couple of days. But anyways, to go back to your question, as far as WWE prominence, I think at this point, I don't see anything in the near future challenging WWE. I mean, the product will be good in stages and it'll be bad in stages, you know, like fans have their criticisms now, of course. And, you know, but it's not just going to fade away or anything like that. And I don't think anybody's going to necessarily challenge them like WCW did. As you can see, TNA, is looking more and more like a sinking ship every week. And
what about MMA?
Well, if you want to compare the two, you know what I mean? Like, MMA is definitely dominating pay-per-view, I'm sure, and it's more attractive. But wrestling is kind of always going to be there, you know what I mean? Like, people love wrestling. I mean, even people that don't want to admit it love wrestling. Like, if you looked at the DirecTV highest ratings every Monday night, it's still Raw. So, like, people, whether they're saying it or not, are watching it, and they always will. And it's not because you can really compare UFC to pro wrestling. I mean, UFC is what it is. You know, it's fighting, it's mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
Well, where wrestling is much more of a movie presentation of good versus evil, and you're guaranteed two performers that are going to go out there and give you their all.
And
you know? So,
and the performers are going to come out and not really be hurt. I mean, let's face it, MMA hurts a lot of people. And I know your wrestling profession hurts a lot of people. But the thing is, you understand that the goal isn't to completely devastate another man. You're right. It's for show. It's
yeah, but let me stop you there, because it is still very, very physical.
Oh, I know that.
Especially with the way I particularly wrestle, you know what I mean? Like, the idea is just not to kill anybody, but to still hit them, you know what I mean? And, like, you know, I like to hit, and I like to get hit, you know what I mean? Just, you know, the obvious, you don't want your nose broken and stuff like that. But,
yeah, but it doesn't hurt to taste some blood.
What's that?
I say, it doesn't hurt to taste some blood.
No, I mean, especially under the right circumstance. I mean, I'll bust my head open, you know, on the most careless stuff. Like, sometimes I'm an easy bleeder, but you know, it's just, you know, but just to go back to your main thing, I mean, you know, it's going to always be there. You know, Wrestling is always going to be a force, I think. And WWE is, they've got the formula. They got everything down. You know what I mean? Like, that's what everybody else is missing.
Well, that's why we say that politics is like professional wrestling. It has the same elements appeal in both. The good versus evil, as you said, you know, the drama, all of that works in both mediums. And
oh, yeah, you definitely have the good guys being the Democrats and the bad guys being the Republicans.
You're on our side, buddy.
Yeah, I see you've been listening to the scripted storyline. By the way, to lend credence to what you're saying about wrestling, people like it. It's been, wrestling has been on TV longer than any other programming.
Anything.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but I believe wrestling has been on TV ever since TV was invented. I don't think there's been a time in the history of television where you did not have some programming of professional wrestling.
Well, I can't speak to that, but I was going a little far back. I don't know. There was three stations back when it first started, right? So, I mean, it's one of the oldest forms of you know, well, when sport. You think of typical amateur collegiate wrestling, it's one of the oldest forms of, you know, competition. But, you know, obviously what we do is, you know, sports entertainment, so to speak, or, you know, what did I used to like to call it, you know. Yeah, it's basically like a combination of things that you're not going to get anywhere else, of sports, athleticism, theme music, pyro, larger-than-life personalities. Like, you get all that in professional wrestling, and, you know, that's what will keep its appeal, because it has all those wacky elements mixed into one.
Well, sure, we've all watched amateur wrestling at the Olympics, and let's face it, it's boring, Chris.
That's not real wrestling. That's not real wrestling.
Well, it is real wrestling. It really is real wrestling, but it's also boring. If you got a man on the mat for 9 minutes, you've got him in a hold. Nobody wants to watch that.
Sonny, I want to bring you into this now. Sonny, Chris, just was had an Afterglow event in Los Angeles. Was it last weekend or the weekend before last, Sonny?
Yeah, it was not this past weekend, the weekend before, because we're now in this weekend. It was actually, yeah, goodness, God, time flies. I think it was just last weekend.
And the demand is out there.
I was going to ask to be tagged in on this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Ronda Rousey. Not that she's my fave, but that girl can kick some serious butt. She has now gone into wrestling. What's happening is the MMA is coming over to our side. They now want to be wrestlers.
And, you know,
it's kind of cool. But and I can vouch for the injuries and stuff, because on tour, when we toured the States, we flew in from Georgia and we hit every state and we packed the house like WWE does now. Back then, I was injured 3 times, one in a pile driver, which is not done anymore.
Don't do that.
Oh, heck no. But, you know, Sonny was in a pile driver every night except for two. On tour with Beastie, and all it is like, boom, that timing's off a little. Well,
yeah,
off. Yeah, I was in the hospital. They were over. They were over me going, I hope you make a lot of money.
Yeah.
That type of pain, you know, and injuries, and God knows. Yeah.
That's Steve Austin.
Just to add to that, actually, I mean, she brings up a good point. It's like a lot of injuries do happen because of the literally just a second of timing being off with something, you know what I mean? Like, it literally is just a second, maybe even a couple seconds. But when your timing's off on something, you land the wrong way, you don't have enough momentum. I mean, I can totally relate to that, because I had an injury that was basically the same thing.
Well, Chris, I think you'll agree, no matter how big and massive and powerful your body is, if you break a vertebrae, that's it. You're done. You screwed up the wiring.
Oh, yeah, and it hurts.
You're done.
Never injuries. Yeah. With you. I mean,
you're lucky if you can walk.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, do you have I know you got a website, but please tell our audience how they can see you on the web or Facebook.
Oh, Twitter is ChrisMasters310, and for booking/interviews, masterpiece83@gmail.com.
Masterpiece83@gmail.com. Are you still wrestling? You still doing shows?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been very busy between going. I just got back from overseas a couple weeks ago. I mean, I'm pretty much covering the globe right now. So, I mean, you name it, I've been there. So it's fun. You know, but it comes in patches, too. Like, I got a couple weeks off, but then I'm on the road again for two weeks or so in England and Germany and whatnot. So, the wrestling business is still treating me well. So, look for me in your local community center or bingo hall.
Chris, how old are you?
31.
Oh, my God, you're a kid.
He's a baby.
He's a baby. Sonny, you brought a baby on the show?
Oh, come on now.
Man, 31? My daughter just turned 30 this month.
My whole goal was to break into this biz as early as possible, and obviously I accomplished that.
Good job. Yeah, bud.
There's a way to do it, Chris, and that's the must thing, because, gosh, you know, all of us goal girls, we're entering in, as I must say, since my birthday's coming up on Wednesday, I'll be the big 5-0. And I was out at the Old West shows last night. I told Chris this. I went to go see a stunt show, and the guy goes, wow, I recognize you. And he goes, you're that wrestler. And I'm like, yes, I'm Sonny. Nice to meet you. And he goes, I was watching your documentary. And I'm like, wow. And this is way out in Arizona in the middle of nowhere at a stunt show. So it speaks volumes, the wrestling biz. And stunt people watch us and have watched us and followed us. And well, yeah. these guys are probably, you know, somewhere around 30, 40, even younger. They sit and watch WWE. And they use that into their stunt shows.
Yeah, and sweetheart, just the fact that you just had a birthday and you just turned, or you're turning 30. You're just turning 30. That's what. Everybody, Sonny is turning 30 years old. That's she just right. told you that.
That's right. As long as they don't guess the real age, I'm happy. I'm proud to be my age.
Right.
And everyone's like, wow, you can't be. Are you kidding? Hey. You're not really 15. I'm like, yes.
Chris. Let me ask Chris a question. Chris, you're into politics, and you watch along, and Vince McMahon is known to be a big conservative. Is that true?
And his wife.
And his wife, of course. And is that typical amongst the other wrestlers?
I'd say most, because it makes sense in terms of being a wrestler. I mean, because... you know, we're independent contractors and you don't necessarily want to be taxed so much money. I mean, and I get that side of the argument too, just because it's like, a lot of that money you're being taxed for doesn't go to like things that necessarily matter. It goes to a lot of BS. So, but you know, I've always been a Democrat just because of the way I was raised. You know, I was raised on government aid and, like really, I mean, even to this day, I mean, The only reason I can't get with the Republicans really at this point is because where they stand on social issues. You know what I mean? I feel like they're just way off course for the millennials, which is our generation coming up, which we've all had gay friends. We all know that weed is not reefer madness. We're all like, you know, we're much more smart and open-minded generation. And
but what happened to toughness?
What's that?
What happened to toughness?
That's
what Republicans are. They're tough. Part of what you need to... You are. You're a tough guy. What happened to being tough about certain issues?
You want me to run?
Yeah.
I'd love for you to run.
I tell you what,
I'm all for tough guys.
You got the mind.
And women.
You got the mind for it. But, yeah, I see where you're coming from. I think that there's a lot of millennials who are actually moving towards libertarianism because of their feel the same
way
as you.
They're disenfranchised by right. both the Democrats exactly. and Republicans.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I promote that here a great deal on the show. I call myself a conservatarian. I can see where you're coming from. But we'll work on you. Maybe we can get you at least to re-register as a non-party or independent.
Get you. Well, I mean, if you ask me to go down a list and ask a questionnaire,
yeah.
then I would definitely be... Like, you know, I'd be a center or an independent, so to speak.
You'd be a conservatarian.
Libertarian point of view is a little too much freedom for me. I don't think people can handle that kind of freedom, you know. Like,
thank you.
I understand it in theory, but I don't think it would work. But the problem with the independent vote is you don't get a vote necessarily. So it's like
make
you have
a stand
to fall on one side or the other.
Yeah. All right. Well, Chris, I tell you what, I'd like to have you come back on the show again in the future, and we'll continue this conversation.
And, sounds good to me.
All right. In the meantime, man, thanks a lot, and you know, keep on wrestling out there, and keep snapping that master lock on those guys.
Yeah. Hey, buddy.
Always, baby.
I got to tell you, I won't arm wrestle you, but I'll debate you anytime. You're a good guy. You really are, and I think your heart's in the right place.
Well, let's do it again sometime then.
We will definitely
do it
again. All right. Thank you very much, Chris Masters. Once
all
again,
right,
folks.
Bye-bye.
All right. Goodbye. That's Chris Masters, Master Lock, and Sonny.
He could tear my arm off and throw it out the building. So yeah. That's how I'm going to get arm wrestling. So
have you ever met Chris Masters, Sonny?
Oh, I may have. You know, honestly, I don't know.
Okay.
Because we come across so many.
All right.
And just because of the, you know, I know a lot of the WWEs, I talk to them. via the social network and whatnot.
All right,
he's
well,
a
listen,
really nice guy.
The real people.
Sonny, stay on the line. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to you.
All right, sounds good.
Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries as we're entering into, well, getting close to the last half hour of our show. Don't forget, when we go off the air at 8 o'clock, you still have a lot of live, good live radio here at the Salem Communications Complex. Up on the dial at 950 WTLN, you'll have John Butler Book, who's going to be live on the show tonight, and he'll be welcoming your phone calls as well. And then, if you can do like I do, I go up as soon as our show is over, I go up to 950, listen to John Butler Book, and then at 9 o'clock, when his show wraps, I come back down the dial to AM 660, The Answer, and listen to a little bit of Armed American Radio with Mark Walters, and he's live from 8 to 11. So a lot of good live radio still to go, and we still got some good live radio to go with our hour, and we got Sunny, our California glow girl, who is in Arizona, on the line still with us. And Sunny, that was an excellent conversation with the master lock, Chris Masters, and but I want to get back to you now. You know, we had the elections this past Tuesday. What was the fallout in Arizona? I don't think things changed too much in Arizona. I believe most of the incumbents won.
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm going to go with California still, since I'm an L.A. girl, guys.
All right.
I can't conform to Arizona.
You can't get
used
to it.
No, we went to this Wild West thing last night. Like I said, my daughter goes, I'm from L.A. My mom's not, though. She's from here. And I'm like, what did you just tell them? I go, No. I go, really? What part of Arizona? I go, no. She had that wrong. I go, I was born and raised in Los Angeles. Guys, I've only been here 3 months. Yeah, because aren't you the California girl? I'm like, well, yeah, you know. So he's like, yeah, you're not an Arizona. And I go, that's right. Thanks.
You know? There you
but
go.
But anyway, I was just following the California deal. At the races, I guess 12 uncalled races remain as Democrats, of course, picked up California seat. Yay, Democrats!
Oh, no. No.
They picked up their third House seat, guys, late Thursday. So stemming the party's losses to 13 seats for now. They say that in 2016, though, hey, there's going to be what we call the script and also the flip to the Republicans.
Yeah, well, that's what you're talking about. By the way, she's talking about the House seat in California. They had I think it was so close. Did they have a recount, or they just didn't have the final count?
They just didn't have a final.
Okay, well, now they do.
Yeah.
Now they do, and that one did stay in Democrat hands. So the total number of House seats that the Republicans picked up Tuesday night stands now at 13. I believe that there are one or two races out there that are being disputed. I'm not sure if they've been resolved yet, but stands at 13. Right now it stands at about 9 in the Senate. It looks like it's going to be at least 9 in the Senate, possibly 10 when Louisiana is resolved. In Alaska, they're still disputing, but it looks pretty much like the Republican won there. You're right, and what happens in 2 years is the Republicans are going to have more seats up to defend, and they're going to be in states that the president won 2 years ago. So what the Democrats are counting on is that the Republicans are going to screw things up over the next 2 years, and Barack Obama is going to make them look enough like obstructionists that they'll be run back out of town. And certainly that's a possibility.
Yeah, well, they set up this thing like, you know, the bad boys or the most wanted list, the 10 most vulnerable senators, and there's 8 Democrats and 2 Republicans in that lineup, you know. But
that was this year, but that changes in 2 years.
Yes, exactly. And then as far as Obama, well, the GOP Senate transforms the defense, homeland security, and the foreign policy agendas, which we'll see on that. I mean, that's just a waiting game with everything. And honestly, I don't know if it can be changed at this point.
No, it won't. The president has already made it clear that he's not going to rethink anything. He's just going full bore ahead with his agenda. And the Republicans are going to be made saps if they are not careful. He'll take advantage of them. He has no intention whatsoever of making deals with these guys.
No. Now, Sonny, please, let me ask you, what do you have against capitalism? Seriously.
You know what, though? I, you know, capitalism, I don't know, but hey, I'd like to be locked up by that master lock anytime. I'll take on that challenge.
You've been looking at his website, yeah, haven't you?
That man's got arms as big as my legs, and I'm pretty tough.
Better to hang on.
There you go.
I'll take that.
Okay, Sonny. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks, okay. Girl.
You're the girl. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Oh, hey, folks, I'm WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And if you really want to find out what's going on in America, check out the American Adversaries. Tough guy.
Ho! Oh, and away we go into the last half hour of our show. And then we're going to turn it off to John Butler Book, and he's going to entertain you up the dial at 950 WTLN with some great information. All right, welcome back. As I said, you are listening to the American Adversaries, Christopher Hart, Lair Adams, and now it is time for Johnny Guns and WTF News. News gathered on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
All right, thank you, Chris. Story number one takes us to Toronto, where a Canadian Reddit user says he's seeking a woman with the same name as his ex to use her plane ticket on a round-the-world trip. Jordan Exani, 28 years old, of Toronto, posted on the website that he bought tickets for a three-week trip to destinations including Milan, Paris, Bangkok, and New Delhi shortly before he and his girlfriend broke up. Timing, right? He writes, in March, I booked a fairly wicked trip around the world for this Christmas for my ex and I. While our relationship has come to a close, I am still planning on going on the trip, and she is not. He continues, and because I hate the idea of a ticket around the world going to waste, I'm looking for a Canadian named Elizabeth Gallagher who could use the ticket. He wrote that he isn't seeking any monetary or romantic compensation for his ticket. He continues, I'm not looking for anything in return, not looking for companionship, romance, drugs, a trade, or to take selfies with you in front of the Christmas market in Prague. If you feel compelled to toss me a couple $100, great. Really, the only thing I ask for is that you enjoy this trip and that it brings you happiness.
Aww. Bull. Bull-loney. Johnny, he's looking for revenge.
You're calling bull junk?
He is slamming this girl in the face with whatever date he takes around the world. Oh, I found another girl to take on a date, and you just sit there at home.
So he's hoping to bank
on... What a clod.
He's hoping to bank on another woman with the same name as his ex,
yep,
who's hotter than his
yep
ex.
That's the only reason.
Well, wait a second.
Well, except for the airline ticket.
He's got one response from another Elizabeth Gallagher. She's Canadian, but she's old enough to be his mom.
Aww.
Says that if there's no younger
perfect
person to step up, I would have to say I would
perfect
be interested.
Hey, there you go.
And this clock, he'll go after her, too.
Maybe. This guy's an idiot. They may just get a selfie in front of that Christmas market in Prague.
I hear puppies whimpering.
All right, next story.
Right, story number two. An Arizona woman says she accidentally gave away her wedding ring while handing out candy at her home on Halloween.
I did that, too.
What? Gave away your wedding ring?
We'll talk about it later.
Okay. Brooklyn Yazzie of Mesa said she stored her wedding ring in a candy jar while helping her daughters carve their pumpkins, and she later dumped the jar into a bag of candy to be handed out. She says, I actually had plastic rings in there, too, so it wouldn't have felt much different. Now, I'm not a member of the marriage club here, but unless she got engaged with a ring pop, I'm thinking you should be able to tell the difference between plastic and gold. Yazzie, who's been married for 10 years, said the ring has more sentimental value than monetary value and is hoping someone will bring it back to her. She says, it's my wedding ring, you know. I mean, you could replace it, but it's not the same.
Plastic and okay.
You know, a gold.
If that had been the old man, he'd have a hard time explaining that to her, wouldn't he?
You know what? The next ring, whether she gets her back or the replacement, you know he's going to super glue that thing to her finger so it doesn't come off.
Uh-huh.
All right, finally, we travel to Scotland, where a member of the Scottish Parliament said he will not be attending a free vegan pizza event due to the animal rights group use of Britain's sexiest vegan. Marco Biaggi of the Scottish National Party said he will not be accepting the free vegan pizza because of the animal rights group People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. They announced that they would be using the title of British Sexiest Version and delivering a pizza to the Scottish Parliament, he says, because the group is using a misogynistic term promoting the event.
Misogynistic.
Yes, he says. Didn't realize PETA was into a body image misogyny. Won't be participating. He posted this on Twitter. He continued, "It doesn't matter if it's vegan. If it's a vegan beauty contest, it's still a beauty contest, and I'm treating it like I would Miss World." Biaggi said on Twitter that he would be interested to see how the media handles his refusal of the vegan pizza. Now, the PETA announcement said the vegan would be served by Jenna McGuinness, who is the sexiest vegan in the UK, while wearing a gown made entirely of lettuce leaves. Biaggi said he won't eat the pizza. He won't eat the pizza, but he wouldn't mind munching on the lettuce gown.
I went to misogamy, Miss whoever she was there. You know,
I can't blame him.
It's a massage.
That gives edible underwear a whole new meaning, doesn't it?
That's the way you get me to eat salad.
All right. Well, speaking of edible.
Is that part of the pyramid?
Speaking of edible, have you guys ever had any toasted congen?
Toasted congen?
Sure.
Toasted congen. Goes great with lettuce gowns.
Yeah. The people
misogamy?
The people in Benny of the Congo, I think, have gotten...
Benny Hill of the Congo.
The people of Benny, that's a town in the Congo, I believe, have figured out how to deal with groups like ISIS. Now, they've been suffering from a group called ADF-NAUL. ADF-NAUL. It is an Islamic extremist group who has been massacring people in this little town. More than 100 so far this month. By the way, this has been in October. So what did they do? Well, for one of the people that they thought was a member of this group, they captured him. They killed him. They burned him. And then they ate him.
I knew you were going there.
Recycling has come to.
Only I would suggest
reuse, recycle.
Instead of killing, burning, and eating these Islamic terrorists, I think that we should kill them, burn them, and then feed them to pigs. I think that would be more
dogs. No, that no. In their religion, I think dogs
pigs.
Is the worst.
Pigs.
Yeah. Pigs.
Yeah,
I thought it was dogs.
Pigs are the worst.
Be anywhere near that.
All right. If you are in Berlin, Germany, they want the gate back. No, I'm not talking about a gate or anything that had to do with the Berlin Wall, which started coming down 25 years ago tonight.
Right.
No, I'm talking about the main gate of the Dachau concentration camp, which evidently collectors want to have.
And they stole it.
Someone stole it. It's a 6-foot-high iron gate, which says on it, excuse my German accent here because I don't have one, but it says on the gate, Arbeit macht frei, which means, oddly enough, work sets you free. Of course, this was a concentration camp that was open. This was the first one opened in 1933, right after Hitler became chancellor, and it was meant for political prisoners of all persuasions, Jehovah's Witnesses, Christians, gays, Jews. They all were sent to this camp where they were forced into labor, and many of them, of course, died.
And people don't understand, Chris. It was a good thing because this led to... gated communities.
Yeah, we don't want to go there.
Gated communities, you know?
They want their gate back in Dachau.
Send your complaint emails to Lair Adams.
By the way, they even though Europe is famous now for having video cameras basically on every corner
everywhere.
Of every intersection in public buildings everywhere, they have made a point of not having those cameras in this prison, this concentration camp, which, by the way, some 800,000 people a year visit because they didn't want to give you the impression while you were there that you were being watched or anything. I think that's the impression exactly people should get when they go there.
Yes.
They might have a little bit better appreciation for what the people went through when they were sent to that camp. Also,
political correctness.
Also, finally, this. You know, Hess isn't going to be Hess anymore.
Really?
The Hess gas stations.
Yeah.
That's right. They're going to be called Speedways.
And, oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, there, and that'll be after the first of the year. The Speedway.
They merged? Or?
Well, Speedway bought them up.
Okay.
And why is this important?
A forced takeover.
Because if you have been collecting those Hess toy trucks, this year's will be the last.
Ooh. It that's going to be a collector's item.
And they're trying to get it in the Toy Hall of Fame. Unfortunately, they are going up against Mr. Potato Head. And no, I'm sorry. He's already in there. They want to be in there with the Legos and Mr. Potato Head. But unfortunately, they have to go up against a lot of other contestants, including American Girl Dolls, Fisher-Price, Little People, and those little green soldiers that we used to have
when we
were kids.
Those things?
Yeah. What about jumping in cold water, Ken? I think that was one of the dolls that was out there, too.
Well, anyway, Hess is trying, like Dickens, to get their toy trucks into the Toy Hall of Fame, which is located in New York, by the way, if you want to go there. It's in Rochester, New York. And hopefully they'll get it in, because they won't be making any more this year.
What do you say? Do they get in, Chris?
I say they do.
I agree.
Sweep it. We put them in.
By the way, they've been making these trucks. This will be the 50th year anniversary, because Mr. Hess, who started the corporation, thought it would be a great way to make sturdy holiday toys for little kids.
Like the giant liquid Prell trucks. I love those.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the American Adversaries, ladies and gentlemen. Last section of the night. And you know, this is the time we do Lair's closing comments. And this is the part of the show I love, because it's so original. The thoughts, the ideas, the expressions conveyed by our own Lair Adams are his own.
You call me Lair!
I know, I'm Bree Byron Blair Syndrome.
Yeah.
But they're all his own. They're never copied. They are original every single time. And with that, ladies and gentemen, Lair Adams.
I have one thing to say.
In his own words.
Almost everything.
I have one thing to say.
Almost
I didn't write this tonight. My brother sent me this, and I'm going to read it.
Okay.
Because I had mouth surgery this week, and I've been under the weather.
Take it away.
No. Is that a good enough excuse?
Yeah.
Tell me it's a good enough excuse. All right, here it is. No, it was kind of cool. The name of this is, and my brother sent it, and I don't have any idea who the author is, but it ain't me. It's called And Then It Is Winter. You know, time has a way of moving quickly and catching you unaware of the passing years. Seems just yesterday that I was young, just married, and embarking on my new life with my mate. Yet, in a way, it seems like eons ago. And I wonder where all the years went. I know that I've lived them all. I have glimpses of how it was back then, and of all my hopes and dreams. But here it is. The back nine. My life, and yours too, and it catches me by surprise. How did I get here so fast? Where did the years go, and where did my youth go, and Chris's, and Johnny's? I remember vividly seeing older people through the years and thinking that those older people were years away from me, and that I was only on the first hole. The back nine was so far off, I could not fathom or imagine fully what it would be like. But here it is. My friends are retired or close and getting gray. They move slower, and I see an older person now. Some are in better and some are in worse shape than me, but I see the great change. Not like the ones that I remember, who are young and vibrant, but like me, their age is beginning to show. And we are now those older folks that we used to see and never thought we'd become. Each day now, I find that just getting a shower is a real target for the day. And taking a nap, excuse me, is not a treat anymore. It's mandatory. Because if I don't, on my own free will, I just fall asleep where I sit. And so now I enter this new season of my life unprepared for all the aches and pains and the loss of strength and ability to go and do things I wish I had done, but never did. But at least I know that though I'm on the back nine, I'm not sure how long it will last. This I know for sure, that when it's over on this earth, it's over. A new adventure will begin. Yes, I have regrets. There are things I wish I hadn't done, things I should have done, but indeed there are many things I'm happy to have done. It's all in a lifetime. So if you're not on the back nine yet, let me remind you that it will be here faster than you think. So whatever you would like to accomplish in your life, please do it quickly. Don't put things off too long. Life goes by quickly. So do what you can today, as you can never be sure whether you're on the back nine or not. You have no promise that you will see all the seasons of your life. There's no promise there. So live for today and say all the things that you want your loved ones to remember and hope that they appreciate and love you for all the things that you have done for them in the years past. Life is a gift to you. The way you live your life is a gift to those who come after. Make it a fantastic one. And remember, it is health that is the real wealth and not pieces of gold and silver. Lastly, consider the following. Your kids are becoming you, but your grandchildren are perfect. Going out is good, but coming home is better. You forget names, but it's okay, because other people forgot they even knew you. You realize you're never going to be really good at anything, especially golf. The things you used to care to do, you no longer care to do. But you really do care that you don't care to do them anymore. You sleep better in a lounge chair with a TV blaring than in bed. It's called pre-sleep. You miss the days when everything worked with just an on and off switch. You tend to use more four-letter words. What and when? Now that you can afford expensive jewelry, it's not safe to wear it anywhere. You notice everything they sell in stores is sleeveless, and what you used to be freckles are now liver spots. And you've learned everybody whispers. You have three sizes of clothes in your closet, two of which you will never wear. But old is good in some things. Old songs, old movies, and best of all, old friends. Stay well, old friend. You see, it's not what you gather, but what you scatter that tells what kind of life you have lived. Today is the oldest you have ever been, yet the youngest you'll ever be. Enjoy this day.
All right. Thanks so much, Lair Adams. And don't forget, folks, we will be back tomorrow with a Drive Time show, and we'll have Abe Katzman on our show tomorrow night. And Tuesday, of course, is Veterans Day. We're going to have William Federer on the show, and we'll do a few little special things for our veterans on Tuesday as
Chris,
well.
Chris, he is so smart.
All right. Yeah, that's William Federer. All right. And don't forget, he'll be on our show Tuesday as well. And don't forget to join us Thursday for the Taste of Apopka Food and Business Expo over here at the CenturyLink campus, and it's going to be a great event. I hope you do come out. A lot of great food. We'll be doing our live remote broadcast there. Jim Turner will be doing his show live there. And by the way, Jim is going to be on John Butler Book Show here in just a few minutes, right at the dial at 9:50 on WTLN on at night at 8 o'clock. So please tune in to those guys. I'm sure they'll be talking a little bit about the Taste of Apopka. But if you would like tickets, they are $20 in advance. There'll be 25 at the door, and that'll be good for all you can eat and of anything that you want to eat. And there'll be all kinds of different cuisines and fare there. So hopefully you can come out and join and have a good time and see us do a live remote broadcast. That'll be this Thursday at the CenturyLink campus, right just east of Apopka, just west of Cafe Positano. And you can go to apopkachamber.org. That's apopkachamber.org to find out about those tickets. Or if you want to call them, give them a call over there. Ask for Carmen at 407-886-1441. That's 407-886-1441. All right, we're going to wrap it up here in just a couple of, in about a minute or so, and we're going to leave you with about a minute and a half of Ronald Reagan's famous Tear Down This Wall speech. And, of course, 25 years ago tonight, they started tearing that doggone thing down with hammers and chisels and just anything, even rocks.
Bare hands.
That's right. So it was a great moment in history, but it is a moment that will soon be forgotten if Vladimir Putin has his way about it. So we can't let him have his way. All right, and don't forget to catch Carl Jackson every Saturday morning. Another great show yesterday morning. He's live at 8 o'clock every Saturday on AM 660 The Answer. And, of course, Arms Room Radio live that afternoon. That'd be every Saturday afternoon at 3 on AM 660 The Answer. Once again, we'll be back again here live tomorrow night with the American Adversaries Drive Time. By the way, on Thursday, Colonel Danny McKnight and Mike McBath will both be with us as we do our remote broadcast, and they'll be there to meet you as well if you can come out and join us at that Apopka.
What about Abe Katzman?
Well, he'll be in Jerusalem, and things are even stickier in Jerusalem than they were last week.
Chris.
Now, Abe will be joining us tomorrow night, and we'll be talking about the situation in Jerusalem. But in the meantime, we want to wish you a happy and healthy Veterans Day, should you be a veteran. And please, folks, say a special prayer for our veterans on Tuesday.
Fly your flag.
They deserve it. Night, everybody.
Today I say, as long as this gate is closed, as long as this scar of a wall is permitted to stand, it is not the German question alone that remains open, but the question of freedom for all mankind. In the 1950s, Khrushchev predicted, "We will bury you." But in the West today, we see a free world that has achieved a level of prosperity and well-being unprecedented in all human history. In the communist world, we see failure. There is one sign the Soviets can make that would be unmistakable, that would advance dramatically the cause of freedom and peace. General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Celebrating 50 years as Apopka's hometown station. 1520 WBZW, Apopka's hometown station. A division of Salem.